This is Lele Pons from Suite 305 with Lele Pons. Game day at my house, it's chaos, but like in a fun way. The TV's ready, the remotes are ready, the kids' stores are going off, and somehow everybody needs batteries at the exact same time. That's why I keep Duracell stocked. And Duracell just released limited edition Duracell and Messi battery packs. The design is inspired by Messi's iconic left leg tattoo. So every battery feels like it comes with an extra kick. From the TV remote to automatic corkscrew, Duracell keeps us game day ready. Duracell double and triple A batteries are the only ones built different with power boost ingredients for long-lasting performance you can trust. Find the limited edition Duracell and Messi batteries in stores at Lowe's and Walmart or on Amazon.
It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's best deal ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple?
Don't ruin it.
Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the refs disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Hey there, it's JVL on The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today. We talked about John Kelly and Hitler's generals and the election. And just we talked about all the stuff that you knew we would talk about because we are less than 2 weeks away from the election, which is really something. Here's the show. Well, good, because the has Harris and Trump tied at 48. So it would be great if that's not the case.
Yeah, I didn't love that New York Times Santa poll, and I have no reason to doubt it. I just didn't care for the results. It's making me most of the national polls still have her up a couple points.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the truth is, look, her up a couple points is within the margin of error for the New York Times Santa poll. That's the every discussion we're having is about the margin of error, and every result that we're talking about would be completely consistent with the polling.
Yeah.
Like from they finish exactly tied to she finishes winning by 3 points. All of that is indicated by the poll. And people are like, oh, the polls are wrong. And I just say, no, the polls are instruments designed to do a specific job. This is like being mad that a pair of high powered, military grade binoculars aren't giving you the results that a micron electroscope would. You know, like that's just, you know, the poles are binoculars designed to do one job. A micron electroscope, microscope, an electron microscope is designed to do a different job. And you can't use poles to tell within 10th of percentage points where candidates are going to land, right?
Yeah, I'm not finding your metaphors to be like as illuminating as if we just talked about the numbers directly. But that's fine. That's fine. Okay, let's talk about Bill's morning shots today. I liked. Let's talk about that, because his argument is, or he's just making the case that if Kamala Harris loses this election, it's not her fault. And
strong agree.
One of the things I like about this observation is that it's close to something I think I feel like I've been saying this whole time, which is this election is about us, the American people. And what it says about us is like the final word here. And I think Kamala Harris, like in a way that I feel like Joe Biden, it might not have been about us, right? It very well could have been that plenty of voters, especially lower information voters who look at Biden, they're just like, that man is too old to run this country and he's not up to it. And Dems are, there's no enthusiasm and Donald Trump crushes. That had a lot to do with Biden. Kamala Harris has run quite a good campaign. Perfect. But
perfect. But no campaign is perfect.
Yeah, but like a strong campaign. She, if you had asked me, like, what advice I would give her, you know, a couple months ago. Like, she's done most of it, with the exception of not picking Josh Shapiro. I would say, like, the extent to which she has tacked to the center, the extent to which she has actively reached out to the right-leaning independents and soft GOP mm-hmm. voters, her hustle. Obviously, I wish she'd gotten her reps in. Like, this is where, like, I've got some nits to pick. I think if she'd gotten her reps in earlier and done more media, because I think they thought they could kind of coast on the vibes, and they realized later they couldn't. And, you know, on that CNN town hall, I was watching her and thinking, she is a gajillion times better than Donald Trump. She mm-hmm. is cogent, but she also sounds kind of like a rehearsed regular politician. And you can see her, when she gets asked a question, she's got like some tics I don't like, where it's like, let me be honest with you. And I'm like, don't preface everything with let's be honest. Let me be honest with you, because and, you know, there's just like things like that where.
Sure.
But like those are, she's like, she's been run a good campaign. and she's, I mean, I don't know. I was sitting across from her thinking, everything you're saying makes perfect sense. I don't agree with all of them policy-wise, but you know what? I don't agree with the Republicans. It's not even a question of policy. Like, both and yeah. both sides have some to like, some to dislike. And so, you know, I'll take the one who's not the aspiring authoritarian who lied about the election results and tried to overturn the last election. Seems an easy choice to me, but I recognize that that's not for everybody. But that's the point. The point is that it'll tell us about us. Because there's nothing we don't know about Trump. And even, you know, I have spent a lot of time, I don't know about defending voters, but certainly trying to explain that, like, oftentimes the things that we know, they don't know. And that is still true, that there's a lot of things about this that the average voter doesn't know. But, like, they know enough. Like, they know about January 6th. They know he lied about the election. They know that he is a convicted felon, and you know, if you can, they know he's been accused and convicted. Now, is it adjudicated rape? Like, they might forget about it. It might not be like highest salience to them. It may not be at the top of their mind, but you can't say they don't know it.
Yeah, and anybody who doesn't know it, I'm not convinced that there was a way to make them know it, right? And this is, you know,
Or make them care
or whatever. And on the subject of the perfect campaign, I mean, you know, the biggest vote share won by any presidential candidate in the last generation and a half was Barack Obama in 2008. And he didn't run a perfect campaign either. Like, the perfect campaign does not exist, right?
Yeah, although, you know, people make mistakes. He was an enormously compelling individual.
He was, but he then was given rocket fuel when the world melted down and we had a global financial crisis that the Republican sitting president had failed to foresee and didn't manage well, right? And that, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is what an insurgent candidate running against a third term from the other party, that is what helps you win the sort of majority he had, in addition to all of his compelling, you know, candidate skills and whatnot. But the point is, like, again, he didn't run a perfect campaign either. And to say, well, Harris didn't win because she wasn't perfect, well, then you're saying that, like that's, it's just a cop-out, because nobody can run a perfect campaign. Right. It doesn't exist.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, like, the people, I mean, Jonathan Martin, like, she didn't move toward the center enough. Like, I don't know. Like, what else could she have done, right? And if anything, I wonder if the opposite case might not be theoretically true, where, I mean, maybe one of the lessons people will learn is, actually, she ran too centrist a campaign and she should have run all the way out to the left and tried to grab some horseshoe voters from Trump, right? Try to bring some, you know, done populist liberal demagoguery.
But she is doing populist liberal demagoguery. I mean, having to listen to her talk about how she's going to, you know, when people ask about grocery prices and she starts talking about price gouging and how she's going to, like, do these caps, I'm like, bleh.
Sure. But I'm saying that's like the sophisticated way of doing it. There are gross ways of doing it. And she could have, maybe the answer is she should have done that. I don't know. Like, you and I wouldn't like that. But the point is, if she loses running the kind of centrist campaign she's running now, I will be hard pressed to believe autopsy reports saying, oh, well, she wasn't centrist enough. She wasn't like, I just don't think that. Now, and maybe the answer is that she couldn't have been liberal enough either, right? That if she went and ran as a radical, she would have repelled a bunch of people in the center and still would have lost. At which point you wind up with just the, at the basic, people just wanted Trump, right? And when people want something, they get it. And I think that's probably the only rational way to explain a loss if she loses, which again, not saying she will, I think it's a coin toss, but if she loses in a reasonably close race, I think the answer is that this is who America is. This is what America wants.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's that clear, or I think that there's a lot more we could press into. And I do think that it's sort of a topic for another day, but I think that the Democrats have struggled in the wake of Trump. Trump is the glue that holds Democrats together in many ways. And so I think that they have had a difficulty presenting to the public a very clear message as a party of what they stand for. And like the focus on democracy, like, it's fine, but I think about how, like, when people say they don't know what Kamala Harris stands for, I think they struggle to say, like, what is Democrats' position on immigration? What is, you know, what do Democrats want to do about healthcare? What do they want to do about the economy? Now, she goes back to housing all the time. I think housing is a good issue. I actually like that she's leaned on housing. I think coming from California, it's an issue she feels comfortable with because it's just been long debated out there and, like, they really are trying to build more. And so I think that's fine, but I think that the Democrats are going to have to, because there's been so, and this is true of both parties actually, because there's been so much political realignment, both of them are going through a bit of an identity crisis on policy. And so, you know, at some point, although I think that Republicans have, they've basically, in some cases, they've like switched entirely their position on things, like let's say Ukraine, but they're able to benefit from having a very clear message over the long term that gives people that like, oh, just like the fumes of Reagan, like, oh, I think the Republicans will be better on the debt and the deficit. I think Republicans will be tougher internationally, you know, just like they just have some of that.
Counterpoint, if she loses, it will have absolutely nothing to do with policy.
Not absolutely nothing, it will but be, I agree will be that there's a lot
entirely driven by culture and, you know, I mean, to the extent that Trump is leaning into, she wants to give transgender reassignment surgery to Mexican murderers in prison, as if A, every murderer in Mexico is an aspiring trans person, and the reason they came to America was because they just wanted to kill someone so they could get locked up so that they could undergo gender reassignment surgery. Like, it's the...
Do you know how many times there's been that this... How many people have undergone the gender reassignment surgery?
As federal prisoners?
Yeah. Like, how many times they have it has been available?
100?
I saw 2.
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds about right. You know,
I mean, the extent,
like, if people want to vote on that,
your point,
like, that's okay.
Okay. But this is, I'll take this. Because on one hand, I think you're totally right. Like, the fact that Trump's closing argument is not about the economy, which is actually super strange. It's not even about immigration. It's like sort of about immigration and like transgender, and crime. Like, they're wrapping all of those things together with this very weird anti-trans stuff. On the flip side, this is about getting, like, unlocking what is, I think, this feeling that people have that the Democrats are weird, like that they're strange, right? That they don't, like, it's a much easier thing for people to understand than economic policy that goes to the heart of, oh yeah, Democrats are crazy. Like, they do the craziest stuff, the weirdest stuff. They're not in the mainstream. And I think to the extent that people's fears around Kamala Harris are that she is too progressive, it tags into that. Like, there's a reason that they are putting all their money behind it, because I bet it tests off the charts.
I'm sure it tests well, but my point is that it's not an actual policy argument. It's just a weird cultural decadence argument.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should talk about the John Kelly stuff, and I want to talk about Tucker and daddy spanking girls. And, I want to talk about the Post report about Elon Musk and Vladimir Putin. Let's start with, I mean, do you want to just get the Tucker daddy stuff out of the way?
Yeah, let's get it out of the way.
Go ahead. You get to lead.
You guys saw this clip, and if you haven't, I hate to tell you to inflict it on yourself, but here's what's interesting to me about it. So Tucker Carlson gets up on stage, he gives this, he's opening for Trump at like Turning Point. And so, Tucker, too, to me, is like very repellent as an individual. Like, I just think his affect and the way that he talks is very gross, because it somehow manages to both be like, it's like a feat intellectual trying to sound like a cool guy and trying to sound tough. I swear to God, at every single one of these guys, from Elon to Tucker, you can just see like them being stuffed in lockers as teenagers and like no one liking them, at like this deep like brokenness that leads them to be the people that they are right now. So Tucker's whole rant, though, is about how the American people have done a bad thing. We've done a bad thing. And we're like a hormonal teenager. And you know what? Daddy's home and he's pissed. And now you, hormonal teenager who's been able to run around, he loves you. He loves you. But it's not going to hurt him more than it hurts you. No, it's going to hurt you, because you need a spanking. You need a spanking. I mean,
he genders America in this.
He does.
He talks about the bad America is a her, which is
bad America is a hormonal teenage girl. And the person setting it all right is the daddy. Now,
I can't understand why Trump is losing women voters.
Yeah, but it's also, isn't it like weirdly porny? Like, who does this, like, daddy's home? Like, the way that he said it.
I mean, who wants to view the president of the United States as daddy?
Can I just tell you, all my early years in, Conservatism, Inc., it was anti-nanny state. Right. It was like the government doesn't get, like, this is where my libertarian, like, I was always kind of a conservatarian. Right. The government doesn't get to tell us what to do. The government, we want as little government as possible in our lives, because self-determination is at the center of the conservative spirit. Right. Self-determination. And so the idea of the government being the daddy that punishes you because you've been bad, because you're a hormonal teenager who get, that is the opposite of everything.
In their defense, Tucker and these people don't want the government to have the power to punish you.
Just Trump.
Because the government is like a whole bunch of institutions that function according to rules of law and stuff. They just want one particular guy. I mean, they just want the strong man to have the power to punish you. They do not want the government to have the power to punish you, as they talk all the time about.
I don't know if you know, Kamala Harris is coming for your guns and stuff.
Yeah, I guess, but they want him to do it sort of
like he's a whole branch,
extra constitutionally, right? I mean, they don't want Trump to pass to propose a bill which the legislature votes on and then he signs and then it is testified. That is not the vision here, I don't think. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit.
Well, it's hard to know like the real vision, because it's just
is hard to know what the policy vision of spanking is.
Yeah.
It's great.
But I do, to the extent that there's something pernicious, but also that feels prologue about the Tucker, like introing Trump. Like, I have always believed that the future of the Republican Party is some combination of J.D. Vance, Tucker Carlson, and Candace Owens. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it is moving in that direction more every minute. Obviously, like he's picked J.D. Vance as his running mate and political successor. Tucker Carlson is like his spiritual guide and also the one who led him to pick J.D. Vance along with the Trump boys, because they all hang out, I suspect. I don't know, man. It feels like the future of the right.
It's pretty bad. I mean, I could see a world in which we look back on Trump wistfully.
No.
Because at least Trump was a clown. Right? You know, like he's a clown with a flamethrower or still a clown. We may get to the point where we prefer when it was a clown with a flamethrower as opposed to like an SS officer with a flamethrower.
Yeah. I don't know. Hey,
how's that for an uplifting thought on Friday?
It's fine, but let's scoot past Tucker.
We're talking about the SS, John Kelly.
Yeah, let's talk about Kelly, because I have a take.
I want to hear it.
On sort of where this conversation has gone is the kind of thing that drives me crazy. So you see our friends on the anti-right, as well as the sort of sycophantic Trump defenders, as they rush to defend Trump, they're like, boy, you know, this would land a lot, them calling Trump Hitler would land a lot better if they hadn't been calling him Hitler all along, which, by the way, that was something J.D. Vance said. I've never called him Hitler, but J.D. Vance has.
I'm sorry, by the way, J.D. Vance's defense of this is, like, I don't believe John Kelly.
Yeah.
Like, I think John Kelly is lying, as if it is inconceivable that anybody could ever call Trump Hitler, which, again, is something Vance... The shamelessness of it is really shocking.
It is, but can I just say...
Even now. Like, I didn't think we could be shocked, but I'm shocked.
But can I say, like, this is actually how these conversations get twisted just slightly, so that they live on the terms of the anti-antis to make it look like the left is overblowing this. John Kelly is not calling Trump Hitler. Nor am I. What we are saying is that Trump, a guy who just... out of his own mouth, which we heard, talked about using the military against the enemy within, meaning us, people who oppose him politically.
Elected Democrats.
Yeah. So that's not, we're not making that up. That's on tape. Trump said it. Okay. That guy has also expressed admiration, which again, we know dictators who he has said it about Xi, right? Oh, or said it about Kim Jong-un. Anybody who is an authoritarian or a dictator who uses the threat of violence and who commits acts of violence against their people in order to keep them in line, Donald Trump has expressed admiration for them always.
And he always calls them smart and brilliant and tough.
That's right. And so the idea that Hitler, who had generals who also did exactly what he said, because he was a murderous dictator, although on a scale that obviously shocked the world's conscience enough to generate an entire world war, and has defined the post-World War II era and has been the thing in most sort of living memory that has kept us away from authoritarians and dictators. The idea that Donald Trump would just express admiration for them is not only believable, it is like completely consistent with everything else that he says.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
it's not like, oh, this is out of left field. Wait a minute, hold on. He said what?
But they want to say that we're calling Trump Hitler. No, we're not. We are saying, and this is the thing, right? This is where they push the argument into a place where they're saying, no, you're exaggerating. Right? He's not Hitler. He hasn't killed 6 million people. That's right. That's why you don't call him Hitler, because he has not killed 6 million people. It is not the same.
Yeah. He doesn't talk about rounding up people by the millions and putting them in camps. Oh. Okay.
What he has done and what he has said, right, is that, like, we are talking about his admiration for these people at a time when he has also expressed, in his own words, all the ways in which he wants to use either the government or he wants to go after people in the United States as well. You're right about immigrants and put them in camps. Like, I think it is not us calling him Hitler. It is us expressing who this guy is But they want to have a slightly different conversation that's on more favorable terms to them.
And yet, if Trump came out tonight at his rally and said something like, you know, the fake news media, they want to say that I'm Hitler. They want to, well, let me shock. You're not supposed to say this, but I love Hitler and I want to be just like him. The next pose of the anti-antis would be,
like he's joking.
Of course he wants to be like Hitler. Yeah, no, Hitler first it would be like he's joking, and then it would be like, actually, the German economy under Hitler was fantastic. Right. True. I mean, this is how it is on everything with Trump. You know, like, no, he didn't say that. That's fake. Then, like, he gets proven to have said it, and it's like, well, you're exaggerating it. And then it's, you know, he says it himself, and it's like he's joking, and then he's like, I'm not joking. And they're like, well, of course he said it. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
This is how the progression runs for everything. For today's newsletter, I have a buddy who's been collecting string and going through the archives of many of these people.
Oh, the Urban Achiever thread?
Yeah, and I'm making that into the newsletter today.
That is so good. So I've been retweeting all that stuff because he has done the Lord's work.
I hope you retweet my newsletter.
I got
a retweet yesterday.
Yes, you did.
Did I get a Sarah tweet or just like a retweet of somebody else?
No, you got a optimistic JVL makes me nervous.
Oh, well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
A full tweet.
But the point of my newsletter today is not to dunk on these people, but as a warning, because what it says to us is that if Trump does try to do actual authoritarian stuff like he has said he wants to, like if he tries to deploy the U.S. military against like civilian populations who he does not like, these people will not stop him. That's the point. I mean, the point is that these people will defend it. And that's like, you know, there ain't no more guardrails, right? At that point, you're just like, well, are there senior flag officers who are willing to resign? What happens if they resign? Do they ever, like, you know, you wind up in places that are very dark, very fast. And
can I tell you what I love, man, about him gathering that string and going back and looking at it? Is not, it, you're right, it's not even about dunking on them, although that's a good byproduct.
The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to the Bulwark Plus and subscribe. Come and ride with us. You'll love it.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.